hear music. And welcome to Stop the Presses here on the 29th of July, 2020. Your host, Mark Anderson, coming to you live as of today. And I'm having a couple computer issues, but my return guest is Alan Myers, a California CPA, and he's really delved into the monetary riddle, the monetary issues, and he has a booklet called FedEd that we started covering module by module last Friday, and we're going to continue today. We didn't want to put too much time in between each session, you might say, so we wouldn't lose the continuity. So therefore, we'll continue more with this probably no later than a week from now, possibly sooner. I'll have to see how the schedule stacks up. How are you doing today, Alan?
Wonderful. Thank you for having me back. I enjoy having the discussion.
Yes, and reading along with you might present some challenges initially here, but no worries. As we get into this, I'm going to let you take it away and get into the next modules. I believe we'd start at number 6, but it would probably be useful if you would to give just a concise, snappy review of the first 5. You don't have to get into a lot of detail, but just sort of summarize the first 5 and then go right ahead into the next ones.
Okay, thank you. Module 1, and keep in mind that each module is one page long. I call it the origin and development of money. The ultimate takeaway on this module is that people, not banks, not governments, created and developed the idea of turning, you could call them items of barter, mediums of exchange, into money. And money is used to peacefully facilitate an exchange of goods and services. Money came from people, not banks, not governments. It belongs to us. Module 2 is a list of historical characteristics of what helped something become money, the item of barter, the medium of exchange. And there's I open all the modules with a quote. This one's really short. Money is worth what it will help you to produce or buy and no more. Henry Ford from My Life and Work. And we just go through all the different characteristics. Ultimately, it's not the characteristics that matter, it's the function. And the function of money is to facilitate, make happen, an indirect exchange, a non-barter transaction. If it works, then it's money. Module 3 is examples of money from our past. And one way I categorized it is animals, consumables, couture, and metals. The one I found most interesting is that the Incas had one heck of a civilization for many centuries. They literally had tons of gold and silver. They referred to gold as, there was a term, and it translated as sweat of the sun. Silver was translated to be tears of the moon. Yet what they used for money was cacao beans, which means for the Incas, their money literally grew on trees. Module 4 is, what is money in the USA today? And the term used in the banking world, the economic world, is M1. M stands for money, 1 stands for the number 1 supply. There's 4 things that are included in this M1 money supply: electronic digits in checking accounts, the paper money that we have, Federal Reserve notes, coin, and traveler's checks issued by non-banks. Traveler's checks issued by non-banks is absolutely de minimis, so I just deal with the electronic digits and checking accounts, cash and coin. And this is the money that's considered in circulation, which means in your pockets, my pockets.
Right.
Finally, Module 5 is, what isn't M1 money today? That is, who has what we have as money, but it isn't in their hands. For example, the money held by banks, the cash, the coin in their vault and teller drawers, it's not money. It's their reserves in physical form. Same with the U.S. government. And the cash and coin, the Federal Reserve notes and coin held by a Federal Reserve Bank, is neither money nor reserves. And it's very, very important to understand the difference. Once again, in summation, it's people, not governments or banks, who created money. And in our current monetary system, it's only people and our businesses, possibly up to the state government level, because the definition isn't clear. But banks have no money in their own name. U.S. government has no money in their own name. And the Fed has neither. And the quote from Module 5, which really speaks to what I see is going on today: there are two ways to conquer and enslave a nation. Note the two words, conquer and enslave. There's two ways to conquer and enslave a nation. One is by the sword, the other is by debt. John Adams, second president of the United States. Right. We are being conquered and enslaved by debt. The sword is a lot quicker if you're victorious. The debt takes a lot longer, but you're more assured of a victory. So that leads to Module 6. That's the wrap on 1 through 5.
Very good.
Thank you. Module 6 is who creates M1 money today in the USA and how. The quote from Module 6 is, "Who controls the money controls the world." Henry Kissinger, around 1995.
He ought to know.
Yeah. Well, he's got another quote, which I added to. I don't have it in front of me, so I'll do it from memory. "If you control oil, you'll control a country. If you control food, you'll control people." I would add to this, when you control banking, you control oil and you control food.
Indeed.
So who creates M1 money? Again, M stands for money, 1 stands for the number one supply, and the number one supply is that money that is considered spendable on demand now. There's an M2 supply and M3 supply, but I just focus on M1 because that's where the vast majority of our money comes into existence. Some people will say, oh, it's printed out of thin air and, you know, on and on and on. No, that's not, and we're going to get into that in another module. Money is never printed into existence. Money only comes into existence one way, as an electronic digit created by a bank. And they do this through bookkeeping. If you really want to understand banking, and I'm not talking about getting into the boardroom, I'm not talking about what happens, you know, in the big buildings, the conferences. If you really want to understand banking, you only need to understand one thing: bookkeeping. This is how money is created, comes into existence, and this is how money is extinguished, goes out of existence. Yes, money is created, money is extinguished.
Yeah, the extinguished part is often forgotten. I would add the caveat that the checkbook money, the entry money you're talking about that comes in via computer keystroke, is the vast majority of the M1 money supply. There is some money printed and coins that are coined, but they constitute a relatively small percentage of M1. Just a point of clarity.
Well, I'll take the other side to that. Yes, we have coins minted, and we're going to get into specifically that in Module 8, if you want to hold on. But I will tell you that, yes, there are, call them Federal Reserve notes, call them cash, that's printed. Call them coins, they're minted. And I'll just leave it at this until we get to Module 8. I'll leave it at this. And that is, the moment they come into existence, as in minted or printed, they are not part of the M1 money supply. Therefore, they, it's for me, they're not money. And I'll get into that in Module 8.
Yeah, please do, because the immediate money we have that's part of M1 includes currency, coin, and checks.
So exactly.
That's a little ambiguous, but we'll save it till late. Keep going.
Thank you. only banks, not the federal government, not the U.S. Treasury, and not the Fed itself. Only banks create M1 money. Way back in the day, it was pencil on paper. Today, it's fingertips on a keyboard, hit enter. Now, most people think that, or some people believe that money is, let's say, loaned into existence as if it already exists and the bank loans it out. That's not the case. Banks don't loan out money that exists. They loan out money they just created.
Correct.
And some people will believe that, let's say, for example, somebody makes a $1,000 deposit. I'm just using simple round numbers for the conversation. They make a $1,000 deposit. And they understand that the reserve requirement is 10%. So somebody will say, okay, that means the bank can loan out $900. No, that's not the way it works. That deposit is now reserves for the bank, and that represents 10% of a $10,000 loan that the bank can fund. That's the way it works.
The fractional banks, reserve element, yes.
Yeah. Banks never, ever loan out their reserves. The reserves are the basis from which they can actually allegedly create money.
I would add one other caveat. I believe I'm right on this. They also don't loan their depositors money either.
Well, they don't loan. Well, depositors money. Okay, when you go and make a deposit at a bank, on let's say on your general ledger, your bank account balance just went up. That's an asset to the bank. That deposit account is a liability. That's part of the bank's reserves. So the bank never ever loans out depositors' money, which is basically a liability to the bank, which
that's
is
right.
Really classified more as their, you know, the offsetting entry is reserves. They use that reserve balance as what they create money based on, with as, you know, the highest reserve requirement is 10%. Some banks don't have any. The last thing on this is that other than the fact that only people have money, only banks create it, we have no real control over it or the supply.
Right.
Is there any other problem associated with this current monetary system? And my answer is absolutely yes. And that is because the way this system is set up, which is for the benefit of banks, our federal government has two choices, tax or borrow. And we'll get into the problem with borrowing. Taxation is just terrible. An economist I know, he once told me, Alan, there's three ways that a federal government gets funding. And I said, I'm only aware of tax and borrowing. He said, the third one is extortion. And I think for the use of that term would encompass interest, fees, fines, and anything else the federal government can come up with.
So, some even call taxation itself a form of extortion, or that it involves elements of extortion. Yeah, that. But what you're saying is true. What module are we on now? I just want to keep things real square.
We're on module 6, and okay. The title is, who creates M1 money today in the USA and how?
Yeah, I want to just corroborate one other thing. What you're saying meshes with what I've learned working with other people I've had on this show, and that is that banks, when they make a, quote, loan, they don't part with anything. They create it right there, and when you deposit money, a demand deposit account, they have to make good on that. Therefore, they regard it as a liability.
Exactly. When a customer goes into a bank or ATM and puts money in, The journal entry is, and this is where all banking happens. It happens in bookkeeping. The debit would be, let's say you go into a bank and leave $100 cash. They're going to debit or increase the asset cash on hand, and they're going to credit your checking account.
Right.
That's it. That's done. Their cash on hand, which is part of their reserves, just increased, and their liabilities, which is your checking account, or also referred to as demand deposit account, sometimes referred to as checkbook money.
Right.
That increases. That's the entry. When the loan is created, what a bank will do, since we're talking journal entries, the bank will, let's say I'm the Bank of Allen, and Mark, you come in for a loan. I say, okie dokie, I am going to loan you $10,000. I will debit the asset, loan receivable, Mark, and I will credit your checking account. Your checking account is part of M1. M1 supply just went up. There's no offsetting decrease anywhere in my bank or in the system itself. Therefore, I, the Bank of Allen, just created $10,000, and the offsetting entry is this receivable that you'll have to be making payments on. That is how M1 electronic digits is created.
Yeah, the money was not moved from somewhere to another place. It was literally brought into existence through that transaction, right? Through the process.
Yes, the supply just increased.
So see, that's where people get the thin air metaphor is right there. It's a bit of a cheap metaphor, but that's where they, you know, when people say it, I think that's what they're referring to.
They probably are, but I'll tell you why I push back on that term. You're familiar, of course, with a balance sheet and an income statement.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And a general ledger. Okay, these are all accounting records that are reports out nowadays out of a computerized accounting system. I've never heard one person ever tell me that a balance sheet, an income statement, a general ledger, or journal entries are printed out of thin air. They're not. This is the reporting, the accounting, the bookkeeping of banking. And it is the same exact source of where our money comes from. Because one of the reasons I push back on printed out of thin air is that when that is said, the conversation is over. No one is thinking about the actual function of bookkeeping in this, and they pass it on, which means they don't really understand. They're not working to understand how this system actually works. And since they don't understand that, they won't eventually understand how we're going to change this system.
It's sort of an abrupt sort of short circuiting effect that metaphor has. It seems to explain it, but yeah, I see what you're saying. It sort of obscures the further inquiry as well.
Yeah, it's like somebody throws out the term conspiracy theory. As soon as that term comes out, the conversation is usually over.
Yeah, short circuit, right.
Because, we cannot have any conspiracies in this country or in the world. And if you are theorizing one, well, then you're a conspiracy theorist.
And there's the telltale music. We'll continue with this module and more with Alan Myers. Stay tuned.
Smile, such platonic eye, how they drown in incomplete capacity. Strangers thought them old when the fear it calls, how we drown in stylistic audacity. Charge the common ground.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org. and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. John Hess, 5 out of 5 stars. Awesome. Probably my only review, but at age 40, I was getting bad heart throb and left arm pain, mainly before bed. I even stopped smoking and drinking sodas for a month, and that didn't work. After one day of taking Extendivite, it was gone and hasn't returned in 3 years. I've ordered Extendivite 13 times, so Amazon just said. Juliet Hordick. I've ordered this product before in liquid form. It is fantastic. My whole family's been on it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed the newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
The newspaper? Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, a majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper does not give out the important attention on what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Returning to Stop the Presses, your host Mark Anderson, 29 July 2020. My return guest, Alan Myers, a California accountant and specialist in studying the Federal Reserve. He's got a booklet called Fed Up, and we've been going through the modules of this booklet. We started last Friday. We're continuing today. Alan, I don't want to get marooned on number six here. We got a little ways to go,
yep.
but maybe you want to summarize six and get into seven. We are in that short segment before the bottom of the hour. So you can kind of massage this the way you want.
Thank you. Just to clarify, the pamphlet's called Fed Ed, not oh. Fed Up.
Oh, but right.
No worries.
Yeah, Fed Ed. Sorry. Yeah, Fed Up. I'm mixed up with another book title.
Yes.
Fed Ed. Fed Education, ladies and gentlemen. Federal Reserve Education, plus the commercial banks that really run things. All right. Keep going, Alan. Sorry about that.
No worries. I think we really hit Module 6. Let's jump to Module 7. Which is, what is a Federal Reserve note? The quote I start off the module with, to me, is very powerful. Who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past. George Orwell. It's almost as if he's talking about destroying history. Or if you control today, you can change the past. And when you change the past, you control the future. Very
yeah,
scary.
Yeah, a very prevalent theme in 1984. The party controls history itself, not simply lying or manipulating events, but the actual history is abolished in a sense in that novel. But keep going. Yes.
Right. Federal Reserve note. We call it paper. It's not wood pulp paper. It's 75% cotton, 25% linen paper, which means it would probably, if it didn't have all that ink on it, make one heck of a shirt. The special thing on a Federal Reserve note is the line, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. Now, people have an idea of what legal tender means. However, there is no federal statute nation must accept currency or coin as payment for goods and services. Well, that's not the way we've been taught to understand legal tender. Which
there was a little bit of a blip there, Alan. Repeat that last part, just a little.
There is, however, no federal statute mandating that a private business, person, or organization must accept currency or coin as payment for goods and or services. We use it. We're told we have to use it. But legal tender is just basically the official medium of payment recognized by law. And that, you know, it can be used to extinguish debt, public and private. But it doesn't have to. There's no federal statute that says you have to take it. I just find that interesting. Federal Reserve notes are printed by the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, the Bureau. It's part of the U.S. Treasury.
Right.
They print them on the request of the Fed. And the Fed's part that orders this is called the Cash Products Office. Now, some years ago, it was 6.4 cents a note regardless of denomination. Now each denomination has a per note cost. For round numbers for today's conversation, let's just say it's 10 cents a note. Which means when, and I'm going to get into this in module 8, but some people, they'll know that there's a line on a balance sheet for a Fed bank. It says Federal Reserve notes outstanding as a liability. And they go, see, look at what the Fed owes. No, that's not what that account's for. That account is what I call a swap account. Every time a bank requests cash from the Fed, that's how they get it. The Fed will send, you know, via armored truck, bunch of cash. What the Fed will do is it will debit or reduce the bank's reserve account. The offsetting credit goes to this account called Federal Reserve Notes Outstanding. It's not a true liability, even though it sits on the liability side of the Fed's balance sheet. Once again, people not understanding bookkeeping, not understanding that the Fed is like no other business in the world, at least in this country, miss what's going on. But that's the, in essence, to the Fed, Federal Reserve notes are nothing but a printing expense to them. It's not money. It's not reserves. Any questions?
It's just ink on paper.
It's ink on paper, and it gets the same which I'll talk to you a little bit more. It gets the same bookkeeping treatment as office supplies, repair and maintenance, postage. That's all it is to the Fed.
Just another operational expense.
Exactly.
That's interesting. We're getting into the bottom of the hour ad here just momentarily.
Right.
What's significant about that? I'd like you to get into that after the ads at the bottom of the hour. Maybe there's more to it than meets the eye in the fact that the printing of money is just an expense to the Fed and not really very meaningful. But maybe there's more to that than we realize. But anyway, we'll be back with more with Alan Myers right after these important messages. Stay tuned.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive. Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new Easy 4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Did you know that you can be tracked and traced when you're online? With identity theft and cybercrimes on the rise, your passwords, your identity, and even your physical location can be revealed to complete strangers. Would you like to surf the internet anonymously and not have to worry about these threats? Well, now you can by visiting patriotinternet.com. For about $2 per month, patriotinternet.com will conceal your IP address and your physical location, allowing you to browse the web, send emails, and instant message anonymously. Patriotinternet.com will bypass filters, block sites, and keyword blocking. You can also bypass logging by your router and your ISP. With PatriotInternet.com, there is no software to install and uses 128-bit encryption for your protection. When using wireless hotspots, PatriotInternet.com shields your information from identity thieves and is compatible with Windows, Mac, and Linux. Protect your identity and your freedom with anonymous internet access from PatriotInternet.com. Visit PatriotInternet.com today.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
And welcome to the second half of today's Stop the Presses show, coming to you live today, the 29th of July, 2020. Your host, Mark Anderson. I'm continuing my conversation with Alan Myers, a West Coast accountant who has written a booklet, FedEd. Get it right this time, Federal Reserve Education, all about the banks. Of course, a quick reminder, a little housekeeping. I still have a supply of the book, Alice and the Money Tree, while we're on the money topic. It is a hardcover book, one for $10, two for $15, three for $20, a small children-like book, it written in rhyme and verse, Alice in Wonderland-style illustrations, great for homeschoolers, kids, adults, really anybody to learn about the way the money masters are manipulating the world. Alice and the Money Tree, you can get a hold of me through the station, or truthhound2 at yahoo.com, my email, free shipping. Anyway, so that offer is continuing. Back to Alan Myers. Alan, are we on module 7? As I say, I'm unable to read my copy due to a computer glitch. Are we on 7?
We pretty much finished 7.
Okay.
Because it was just basically about the Federal Reserve note. Bureau of Engraving and Printing prints it for the Fed. The Fed pays a per note charge, anywhere from 5 to 13 cents, round numbers, 10 cents a note. And to the Fed, which we're going to get into a little bit more, to the Fed, it's just a printing expense, a regular, ordinary, necessary, normal business expense. That's all a Federal Reserve note represents to the Fed. So now we're into Module 8. What are reserves? And how do Federal Reserve notes and coins become M1 money? Reserves and money are not the same thing. And just to make this simple, people have money, M1 money. Banks and the U.S. government have reserves. Reserves and money are not the same form of item of barter, medium of exchange. Reserves primarily are used by banks so they can settle accounts with other banks. But reserves and money are not the same thing. M1 money. We know that the Federal Reserve note is printed. It's, as just talked about, it's printed by the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. They do it based on orders from the Fed. Sitting on the loading docks of the Bureau of Engraving and Printing could be, let's say, millions and millions of what I refer to as street value dollars. To the Bureau, it's just a print job, 10 cents a note. The Fed comes and picks it up, armored trucks, takes it back. And it's an interesting process. When the armored truck gets to the Fed, it will stop in front of a big steel roll-up door, engine running. The door will come up. The truck goes inside, the engine goes off, the door goes down, and the whole rig, truck and all, are dropped down. It's only below ground level that the armored truck is unloaded.
Interesting.
I know this because I met a driver. To the Fed, as I said earlier, they may have billions and billions of street value dollars in their vault. But to the Fed, it was just a printing expense, like postage, office supplies. Yet, if you look at the security around holding the Federal Reserve notes, the vaults, the electronic surveillance, the armed guards, you would be thinking they are, you know, guarding the royal jewels, so to speak. They're guarding to them what is nothing more than a printing expense. Next stop, a bank. I'm the Bank of Allen. I call up the Fed. I said, I want some cash. They send it to me. When I get it, my reserve account at the Fed is reduced dollar for every dollar of Federal Reserve note I obtained. So to me, the Bank of Allen, all the Federal Reserve notes I have in my vault and teller drawers are just my reserves in physical form. It's not part of the M1 money supply. It's not considered in circulation. It's not money. Next stop. Mark, you come to an ATM and you decide to draw out $100 out of your checking account. And at the end of it, you get 520s out of the machine. Your M1 cash money supply, your physical money supply, just went up $100. Your M1 electronic digits just decreased. Your overall money supply has not increased or decreased. It's just changed form.
Right. Electronic impulse is becoming tangible money.
Right. So the takeaway on this is just understanding that only, again, it may go up to the state level. The definition is not very clear, but for right now, we'll just say people. Only in the hands of people and our businesses are Federal Reserve notes actually part of the M1 money supply. If it's held by the bank, it's their reserves in physical form. If it's held by the U.S. government, it's their reserves in physical form. And if it's held by the Fed, it's nothing. You know, and that's why when bills become unusable and they're sent back to the Fed for the last time, they'll burn them, they'll shred them, they'll bury them. It's just a simple.
Will they bury them whole? Do they?
No. They'll shred them and they'll turn them into mulch. You can buy bags of it too. But you would never shred a bundle of hundreds if it actually had that kind of value in your hands, and it doesn't. So that is basically. And the coin process is very similar to the Federal Reserve note process, except they begin their journey from the mint. And on the books of a Fed bank, it's not a printing expense. It's considered inventory.
I understand from reading the Treasury's website, a brief footnote here, that the Treasury more directly issues coin, whereas the Fed is more involved in issuing printed currency. There seems to be a distinction there, according to the Treasury.
Well, if you want coin, you're going to be dealing with usually the Federal Reserve Bank. You may deal with the Treasury, but I really doubt that. And there is an account on the books of a Fed bank called inventory, and that inventory is coins. Whether the Treasury has, whether the Treasury might be more connected with moving coins to the Fed, but to me, either way, it's still not money. It doesn't become money until it gets into the hands of people.
Well, here's the question that's really coming to the fore as you discuss this. There's this line of demarcation between reserves and M1 money that's in your purses and wallets and hits the streets and becomes live and is actually engaged in commerce. It sounds to me where would I begin? When the banks order money from the Fed and they want cash, are the banks doing it for the benefit of the community or themselves? In other words, the quantity of the money that the banks might want from the Fed in the form of currency, and here comes the Brinks truck and they make the delivery. Is that determination of how much money and the purpose behind the money and the economic plan, if you will, is it for the benefit of society or the banks? I mean, both in purpose and amount.
There's only one reason that a bank would hold cash, currency, Federal Reserve notes. I just use the term cash. There's only one reason. Their customers are going to want it. Because if I'm a bank and I got cash in my vault and teller drawers, you can rob me. If I have no cash in my vault or teller drawers, you can't rob me. I only have what I need to make good on potential, on what I think my customers are going to want on any given day, any week. Mm. Come the holidays, okay, especially, November, December, you're going to want to have a lot of cash on hand because people are going to be wanting to draw it out. You may have to fill up the ATM machines because they're going to give cash away. After the holidays, for example, people start returning the cash. And at a certain point, the bank doesn't want all this excess physical money on its premises. It ships it back. It doesn't want it. It's a liability to them. It can be stolen from them. So banks, to me, only keep as much cash and coin on hand as they need based on their anticipation of what their customers are going to want.
So it's more of a PR thing to grease the wheels of what they do. It's not really a larger necessity or larger purpose. You're saying it's more of a connect with the public sort of PR thing to keep the wheels turning.
Well, how would you feel if you went to your bank and the ATM was closed down and you go inside and you say you want to draw $500 out of your checking account and your checking account is really flush?
Yeah.
And the teller says, I can give you $250. What? This
yeah.
is no. No,
yeah,
it, yeah. that doesn't work. That's the time you start thinking, okay, I'm getting all my money out of here. I'm making a big transfer. So it's to keep people happy and comfortable.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, and then you're saying that the Fed has a lot of money in its vaults that remains uncirculated. That is, it's not M1. One wonders, just an open question, one wonders how much and why and whether they're withholding money that belongs in circulation, because there tends to be not enough money to buy what comes off the production line. You know what? The prices and costs of what's produced pretty far exceeds the money supply, and certainly the debts that we have, public and private, vastly exceed the money in circulation. So you wonder if there's a intentional money dearth there. You know, they want there to be something of a money famine or shortage on purpose. I'm just kind of wondering out loud.
Right. The thing is, the Fed is doing for the banks what the banks are doing for the people. If a bank calls up and says, you know, I need this much in Federal Reserve notes, and the Fed says, sorry, can't help you, this is not going to work. They're keeping enough to make sure all the banks in their region can be taken care of. And it would happen at the Federal Reserve Bank. It might happen at their branch. For example, the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco has a branch in L.A. The branch in L.A. apparently takes care of the cash needs of Vegas. Again, in the hands of the Fed, it's just a business expense. It's like a bunch of rubber bands and paper clips. It has nothing directly to do with the money supply. It only becomes money, as we already talked about, is when you, the customer, are willing to give up an electronic digit, at what I call M1ED, to get physical money, what I call M1CA. So this is not where the money supply problem is. The money supply problem starts with the banks, not with the Fed. So whatever the Fed has, it has. It's going to make its job of servicing the banks easier so they don't ever say, oopsie. But it's not really directly connected to the M1 money supply, what's in circulation. It just makes them capable of supplying the needs when it needs to.
Yeah, so currency becomes sort of a public relations coupon, if you will, in lack of a better description.
It's just allowing people to have physical access to their money when they need it and want it.
Without which the people would protest, yes.
Oh, you know that would happen. Okay, Module 9. Module 9 is the Federal Reserve System, the Fed, public or private? Some people have said that the Fed is quasi-public. My response to that is, that's like saying a woman is quasi-pregnant. No. You either are or you're not. And the Fed, the short answer is, it's private. And I'll tell you why I say I believe the Fed is private. Just to be clear, the Fed includes 12 banks. I think it's now 24 branches and the Board of Governors. Each Fed bank is independent, privately owned, and run-for-profit corporation. The first Federal Reserve Bank was the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. The Federal Reserve Act of 1913 was signed by Woodrow Wilson, December 23, 1913. Federal Reserve Bank of New York went operational in November, but it incorporated November of 1914. It incorporated in, I believe, May of 1914, and had its first board of directors meeting in October of 1914. These are private corporations. Each bank has a president, vice president, board of directors, employees. Here, now this is where it gets interesting. And if you read the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, specifically page 8, section 7, some of this information pops. Each Fed bank is regional. Its stockholders are the member banks within the region. That's right. Every Fed bank has stockholders. This stock is absolutely, totally, utterly private. You will never find it out publicly traded. You have to be a bank. The bank cannot in any way, shape, or form encumber this stock ownership. The Fed banks are self-funding, which I can get into later. They don't receive any funding from any government. Well, if you don't receive any funding from any government, how can you be public?
Right.
The stockholders back then would receive a 6% dividend based on their capital. That's still the maximum dividend, annual dividend. The Fed refuses to honor any Freedom of Information Act or FOIA request. You can't do that if you're public. All Fed banks are subject to state property taxes. That doesn't sound like a government entity or a public entity. But here's the kicker, two of them. It's known that the net-net, I'll just call it the net-net profits of every Federal Reserve Bank is turned over to the U.S. Treasury. In the past, it's been referred to as interest on Federal Reserve notes, which would be laughable if it isn't so wrong, because why would the Federal Reserve Bank pay interest on something it owns?
Right.
It's been called transfers to the U.S. Treasury, which is somewhat accurate. But if you look at the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, as I said, page 8, section 7, you find out exactly what that transfer is. It's a franchise tax. We know that franchise taxes are paid by private corporations to government entities for the privilege of doing business. And finally, it's in the notes, all or substantially all the employees of the Fed banks and Board of Governors belongs to a retirement system, a private retirement system, a multi-employer retirement system. So you got 12 Fed banks, you got one Board of Governors, and you have one other employer. The other employer is the plan administrator itself. Their retirement system is so private that the plan administrator is part of it. No, the Fed is not public. The Fed is not quasi-public. It is absolutely private. And what's the kicker is the Fed is supposed to be the regulator of the monetary system, but each Fed bank is actually owned by the regulatees. So the regulatees own the regulator. Who do you think this system is really running for or being run for? The banks, the owners.
The House Banking Committee, when Jeb Hensarling was in there out of Texas, the congressman in recent years, would talk about the increased regulatory powers of the Fed, particularly since Dodd-Frank. And it was always a little ambiguous as to exactly what those were. And I'm not doubting that they exist necessarily, but he never really explained, at least clearly or thoroughly, how the Federal Reserve System had taken on new regulatory powers. But I don't want to muddy up today's discussion with that. I'm just mentioning it as sort of a tangent or a peripheral thing right now.
We could come back to that at another time. I'll try to get a quick
point of clarity, though. So when the Fed pays that profit margin to the Treasury, that's the franchise fee.
It's a franchise tax.
Yeah. Okay. Just one. That point of clarity. Yes.
Yeah. Those are the words in the law. Franchise tax.
Right. You tax a private entity. Right.
Exactly. So is the Fed public or private? It's absolutely, totally, undeniably private.
And they pay state property taxes on top of the federal franchise tax. So that seals the deal right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So they pay something toward your local schools and all that, like you would tax anyone else, I assume.
I would rather just, and that's what I'm ultimately looking for, is we make the Fed obsolete. It's not necessary. It doesn't provide a good function, and there's a much better monetary system in the offing, and that's ultimately what we'll be getting to.
Yeah, now where are we at module-wise? Because we've only
module
got 3 minutes.
Yeah, module 10, and I can try to make this short. The title of it is The Problems with a Cashless Monetary System. Right now, we have an electronic money and physical money.
Right.
There's people in the world, especially Sweden. They want to move to a totally cashless system. They think it's hip, happening, techie, it's wonderful. You know, we don't need to, you know, print up all these dirty, filthy bills and coins. Just one problem. And that problem is, if all your monetary wealth, not your physical wealth like cars and houses, but if all your monetary wealth is basically electronic digits in a computer somewhere, you don't know where that computer is. You have no direct access to it. Your indirect access can be limited. And to have access, you're going to, you know, you need access. There needs to be a computer. There needs to be internet access, perhaps, and you need electricity. And you can be locked out. I'm not comfortable with that. Talk to the people of Greece and Cyprus when their systems went down. And then when they finally opened up, they were told exactly how much they could take out of their account every day, like maybe 100 euros. And yeah, you can stand in a line for 2 hours to get it. When you don't have physical money, you can't store it away outside the electronic monetary system for a rainy day. You are totally dependent on that system. And this is the problem I have with being totally dependent on electricity. There's a thing called the Carrington event. I don't know if you're familiar with that. The Carrington event happened in the 1850s. Now, the only physical the most obvious physical sign that this event took place is that the Aurora Borealis was seen down at the tropics. Earth got hit with this absolute huge, massive blast from the sun. The only reason, other than seeing the Aurora Borealis down in the tropics, that people would know is it fried all the telegraphs. They caught fire. They just fried them. Well, if we were to be hit by another Carrington event, every electrical device, including the grid, would be fried, which means every bit of your monetary wealth is gone. And it's not like, oh, we'll just replace the computers. No, all of them are fried all around the world. And there's no electricity anyway. This is not good. And this is, in a way, why I don't like cryptos.
Yeah, there's definitely an underbelly to cryptos, and that's come out over time. We're approaching the end of the show, Alan. Let's give some web addresses and contact info for you, and we'll be continuing this discussion soon.
Excellent.
Go ahead.
You can find our website is feded.us. You can actually hear me on the radio. Check it out on the web. It's KMET 1490 AM. We're on Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m. It's Constitution Radio. I'm a regular guest, sometimes guest host.
Again, give those all letters again.
KMET.
KMET, okay.
1490 AM Radio, and that AM stands for American, I like to say.
Well, great, Alan. Thanks for being on again. And we got through some more modules. We'll have you on again no more than a week.
That'd be great.
Maybe sooner, but at least by next Wednesday at the very latest. So thanks again, Alan Myers. Very educational stuff. And we'll see everybody next time here on Stop the Presses. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.